Today's daf in Masechet Megillah, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Yud Beis, and we are continuing our investigation into the depth of the words of the Megillah. So what we were talking about yesterday was the rather complex cheshbon of how it is that we had three different ways of understanding what was going on so far. Belshazzar made his mistake, then Achashverosh made his mistake, and then we still have to question at the end that it looks like we were making a mistake, because at the end there should have been a Geula while Achashverosh was still king. So the last thing that we had learned was that we must have actually included extra years, because what we thought was that we had 68 years between Nebuchadnezzar's 45 years and Evil-Merodach's 23 years. That was a mistake. And we also thought that we had 5 years with Koresh and Daryavesh. That was also a mistake, because at the moment that the Malchus passes from A to B, it's possible that we count the same year both for A and B, because it's the last years of A's reign, first year of B's reign. So if we put them together, we actually ended up with two extra years, which is why we needed to wait until then, till we actually got to Koresh. And in fact, this is where we were up to, is the first words on this daf, that chiddush that we said yesterday, that it must be that it was really a total of 67 instead of 68 years with Nebuchadnezzar and Evil-Merodach, we're not bringing a right to the second part, but to the idea, namely that at least in one of the two cases that we spoke about, Nebuchadnezzar and Evil-Merodach, that over there was an extra year in the transition, and therefore it's the same assumption about Daryavesh and Koresh. So Tanya Nami Hachi, V'ot Shana Acheret LeBavel. So there was one additional year to count from the time that Bavel was not Malchus, but the time that Bavel was Shaletet on Yisrael, which was from the time of the invasion where they took over from Jehoiakim. And then, after that, Daryavesh, that was the end of Belshazzar. Then, Amad Daryavesh, Vihishlima, and that was the 70 years. So therefore, what we had thought, Nebuchadnezzar was the whole time, and Belshazzar added another 3 years after Nebuchadnezzar and Evil-Merodach, that really wasn't so. So therefore, the Brice is saying that from the time of Bavel, that is to say, Bavel over Jehoiakim, that was necessary, one more year was necessary to finish the 70 years. How come it needed that extra year? Obviously, only because we were missing that year. Well, my Rava, you think they were confused. Look, Daniel was living at the time, right? And Daniel, he was the one that had been given all of these, like, Nevi'ahs, and he was even the one that had spoken about the 70 years, and he was also very confused, because there he was expecting that the end of the 70 years had come, and nothing's happening. And that's why it says that he started all of this, the tefillahs, he started with an intense fasting until finally the Malach sent him to tell him, Daniel, don't worry, from the time that you started all of this fasting and tefillah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been working on this to work it out for it. Ani bati b'dvarecha, as we'll see. So he made a mistake. Where do we see that? Because he says b'feresh, at the beginning of that process, he says, b'shnat achat b'malcho, Ani Daniel, Binoti Basfarim. So he apparently was having trouble, because he sees that the Shivim Shana are finished, and therefore I started looking into, Rashi says Binoti is always a question of making precise cheshbonot. So in other words, he had to go over his numbers. That's amazing. You know, everybody's always doing the numbers in Daniel, you know, all of the Choshvei Kitzim, what's this number mean? What's that number mean? Daniel had to do the same thing. So he says, there I was trying to figure out all of these numbers. So he said, I went over it again. This is like the word that would be used by an accountant when the books aren't balancing. He says, Binoti Basforim, I go over the books. So he's going over the books. So obviously, Michlal de Ta'a, I mean, that implies that there must have been some kind of mistake, and he couldn't figure out, like, so what did I do wrong? Says the Gemara, Lamaisa, we've got serious contradictions, because we have that one pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which we spoke about yesterday, that it says over there, and this is what everybody from Belshazzar on was trying to work out, and in Yirmiyahu it said, Limlot lebavel shivim shana efkodatchem. And that is actually not really true, apparently, because Daniel himself wrote that it was Dafka Lechorvot Yerushalayim. Because he says over there, Lamalot Shivim Shana is Dafka Lechorvot Yerushalayim. Now that's a tremendous difference. I mean, to talk about from the time of Yehoyakim, and he talks about from starting from the time of the Churban. I mean, that's 18 years. That's a big difference. That means there's not 70 years of Golas Babel. There's actually 88 years. So how do you explain that? Oh, my brother, very simple. Take a look what actually happened. All HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised was, the Shivim Shana, all it says was, Efkodotchem. Right? Lamalot b'bavel shivim shana efkodotchem. That just means efkodotchem. Doesn't mean I'll be goel. It means I'm going to be remembering you. Now that's exactly what happens in this week's parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them, you know, I'm telling you over this really special message that was coming yet from the time of Yaakov Avinu and Yosef, and which everybody had remember, and that was the Serach Bat Asher story, that she said that she had a Kabbalah. Anybody who comes along, it says, Pakot Pakarati Eschem. So, Efkod Etchem, that was the promise. Pekida. Then what happens after the Pekida? Nothing. So things just get worse. So Moshe Rabbeinu is in the same position that Daniel is in. You said you were going to do something. You didn't do anything. So, okay, so the same thing happens over here. Oh, my Rabbi, lepkida b'yama. All I did, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is I promised a pekida. I didn't promise a geula. You want to see that pekida happened? It certainly did, because if we are correct in saying that we were missing that year, so then, hainu dichtiv, what actually happened when Koresh became melech? Ko amar Koresh melech paras, ko mamlechot ha'aretz natan li Hashem Elohei Hashamayim, Vuhu pakad, he definitely uses that word. Vuhu pakad alai livnot lo bayit b'Yerushalayim. That's exactly what Hashem said. Efkodotchem. See? Exactly what happened. So then what does he say? He says, okay, since that is true, mi bachem mikol amo, yihi elohavimo, anyone from Hashem's nation, may God, his God, be with him. Let him go up v'yal Yerushalayim, and so on. And in the end, v'yivenet beit Hashem. That's all that he did. He just allowed people to go. And therefore, Dorash Rav Nachum bar Rav Chisda, this is such a strange pasuk. It says, Ko amar Hashem, this is in Yeshayahu, Ko amar Hashem limishicho lekoresh. Mishicho lekoresh. What is that supposed to mean? To his Mashiach. Mashiach means that he was anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha, like Mashiach. Asher Echazakti b'yimino, that I held his right hand. What does that mean? V'chikoresh Mashiach haya. This is what it means. It means, Ko amar Hashem l'mashicho, meaning to Mashiach, the real Mashiach. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is having this discussion. You know, look at this bum. I've really got problems with you. I got nobody to share this with, Mr. Mashiach. The only one I can talk to is you, because you've got this perspective, this historical perspective. Can you imagine how frustrated I am? Kovel ani lecha al koresh. So in other words, we're supposed to read the pasuk like this. Ko amar Hashem lemishicho, comma. Lekoresh. You know about that koresh bum? That's a lit, means about, right? Okay, so that's what it's saying. Kovel ani lecha al koresh. I got to share this, you know. I got to complain to someone. I tell the guy, Hu yivna beiti v'yikabetz galuyotai. There I was holding his hand, and I'm telling him, listen, you can build the Beis HaMikdash, you can bring the Jews all back together again. And what does that idiot do? He says, yes, God had been poked alai, and therefore, here's the big news. anybody who feels like it can go up and do something about it. I mean, that's crazy. And then, and we actually find out that Rish Lakish says later, and with the whole story that we have with Rish Lakish, I don't talk to people from Babel, those bums, that they didn't come back at the time that Koresh said that everybody could come back. I won't even talk to you. And so imagine if Koresh had done his job. So if Koresh had done his job, he would have picked up every Jew, and he would have had it transferred back there to Israel, and he would have sent construction crews, and he would have built the Beis HaMikdash, and then that would have been the end. Instead, we have to go through all these thousands of years of mess up because of the fact that he didn't do his job. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Mashiach, I had things all set up, you know, and there's no good that comes and wrecks it. Okay, now, we're moving back to the next pasuk in the Megillas Esther. Paras umadai apartamim. Wait a minute. Is it paras umadai, or is it like it says in the pasuk later, it says l'malchei madai v'paras? I mean, I understand. And not only the order is confusing, it's paras umadai, or madai v'paras, but one of the pasuk has the word chel next to paras, and the other one has the melech, malche, next to madai. I mean, so we seem to flip the question of the power, meaning the aristocracy, with the malchus. So, like, what's the real order? Oh, my Rava, remember, this is a very complex interrelationship, paras and madai. So how in the world did they get along if one or the other is going to be on the ascendant? So they understood this in the first place, and they made a deal. So they made the following deal. Atnuye atu badayo, they made these conditions. Iminan malche minayche iparche. So if we're going to have a king from A, then we're going to appoint the lower level government, maybe the local governors will be from you. And iminayche malche, and if the other one gets the kingdom, so then minani parche, and they kept taking turns, basically. So this idea is expressed in the pasuk. Sometimes we have the chel, and sometimes we have the malche, and sometimes we have paras and madai, sometimes we have madai and paras. So it's all beautiful. That explains the Seder HaPsukim. But it also, of course, opens up the very important insight to us, which has been there from the beginning, hamolech. And that is that this was a person whose political manipulations were extremely important. And that means that the events that were taking place were in a period of that instability in which things needed to be extremely balanced. And because of that, it's always the Jews that are the pawns that can be used in exchange for those balances. So we've got the influence of Amalek, we've got the influence of Bovel with Vashti, Poras, and Modai, and it's a time of interregnum in which that was the point of the Gemara just bringing out, that we're counting the same year for two different kings. That's exactly the point. And that just gives you a deeper sense of interregnum. And that's always the period where the Jews both have great opportunities and also are in great danger. By the way, I forgot to mention before an important point that Rashi points out, which is that the pasuk about Ko Amar Hashem L'Mishicho L'Koresh actually implies, if you take a look at the Ta'amim, it actually implies that the way that the Gemara read that pasuk, which sounds weird, Ko Amar Hashem L'Mishicho, comma, about Koresh. But if you look at the pasuk, that's exactly how the Ta'amim are done. Because what we have over there is Zarka, which is always followed by a Segol. And instead, there's no Segol. So how is that? Because it's Gufa trying to show us that the way you would want to read it would be L'mishicho L'koresh, that it isn't that way. It's L'mishicho, end, and now we start the Koresh. Anyway, next pasuk. Baharato et osher kevod malchuto. Ooh. Now, that teaches us in Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina, Malamit Shalav Vash Bigdei Kuhuna. We talked about yesterday bringing out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash and the way that this was so important both to Belshazzar and to the party that he was having. But besides the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, he apparently was wearing the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol, because the way that we find in the Torah the description of the Bigdei Kuhuna for Aaron was that it is lechavodah letiferet. So here it says yikar tiferet. That is the yikar. We saw that that was the word for kavod in Aramaic. So yikar tiferet would be the same thing as lechavodah letiferet. Amazing. So chtivatam lechavodah letiferet. So that means that he looked at himself and he looked at this party as something that would be taking the place of the Beis HaMikdash, and that would actually be making the same point that Belshazzar had made, which means that the party was about the fact that he had discovered that there would be no new Beit HaMikdash. That's the point. Belshazzar had made that party, and that's why there was the writing on the wall. He made that party to celebrate Kishevet. And what was the Kishevet? Was the fact that finally we don't have to worry about the Beis HaMikdash. So now we're looking for a replacement, a center for the ruchnius of the world, which is a profound insight into the meaning of Golus Bichlal. So that when you substitute whatever it is, which Nebuchadnezzar tried to do as well by building that statue and everybody coming together in the symphony orchestra, and we'll see that that is central to the story over here as well, everybody was attempting to actually take the place of Yisrael. And look, this sounds crazy until you realize that it is literally as contemporary as every day's newspaper. This is all the Umay Sa'elam are interested in. And this is the whole point of the UN. It's the whole point of every meeting that they have, whether it's about human rights or the Security Council, whatever it is. It's always about the problem of these damn Jews and how it is that we're going to be able to cut this out. So, okay. So nowadays it's hidden in an, purely political agenda, of course, about, you know, Western liberalism and the way that the Jews are treating others. And obviously it has nothing to do with religion. It's the Arabs who actually bring out how much it absolutely does have to do with religion. And in fact, the idea that, you know, history has come to an end, that the absurd beliefs of the Western liberals at the end of the 20th century, that that was brought to an end itself by, you know, 9/11 and by the Mesiras Nefesh of Arabs, who says, no, nothing has come to an end. Actually, we're just beginning. And not, we have exactly the same thing with the La Shmid La Rogel Abed, which is coming from where? Poras. It's unbelievable. The same words every day in the newspaper. La Shmid La Rogel Abed. Yes, yesterday there was this thing. Now, this is the most important thing in the world, is to wipe Israel off of the map. Incredible. So here we are, thousands of years later, you understand, dealing with exactly the same issues. And yet when we turn back to the Megillah, we say, oh, come on, this is like this is exaggeration. I mean, this is what these people are thinking about, replacing the Beis HaMikdash, telling her you can have anything you want, but don't mention the Beis HaMikdash. That's ridiculous. And I remember my kids used to tell me this, but this is like 50 years ago that my kids were telling me this. I'm trying to explain because it wasn't clear yet. It only became clear in the past 20 years or so that the entire world thinks about nothing else. One of them came to me and said, you know, Abba, you always used to tell us this. And it's actually true. I can't believe it. I thought you were talking about the elephant and the Jewish question. We're back. It's really an amazing thing. So it gives it such a different feeling for the events in the Megillah, because this is serious stuff. Whatever they hide it under, it's always about the same issues. Okay, so here he is, wearing the big day kuna, using the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, and then he makes this big party. Now, it's really a little bit weird, because what it says over there, that uvimlot hayamim ha'ela, after he had this big party, then it says, asa melech l'chol ha'am ha'nimtza'im b'shushan ha'bira, l'migado v'ad katon, mishteh shivat yamim. He's got 180 days, he's inviting all of the people from far away and everything. What are the people in Shushan doing during the time that he is busy entertaining all of these foreign dignitaries? You know, this is like the way people in Yerushalayim feel when all the traffic comes to a halt every Monday and Thursday because some idiot is coming around that has to be shown covered by the government. Again, you know, nowadays we take these things for granted. But in the early days of the country, I remember Reb Chatzkel Zatzal, who was the Rashiv of Hebron, Reb Chatzkel Sarna. So the country was working very hard in those days to be Makariv Africa. because it's very important to have the African vote. And so all the little countries in Africa, they had some guy from the Congo or something, so they were entertaining the president from Congo. Anyway, they had him speak to the Knesset. So Reb Chatzko goes to the Knesset with an entourage, and he insists on speaking from the plenum. He's going to talk to the whole Knesset and give them mussar. So, those days they had a lot of covet for Rabbonim. Remember that Ben Gurion actually would go to the Chazon Ish to speak to him in his house. He didn't expect the Chazon Ish to come out and discuss things. So Reb Chatzko goes up there and he wants to speak to the Knesset. He's like, well, Rav, we're very sorry, but, you know, you have to be a member of the Knesset in order to be able to address the Knesset. What? He says, that Schwarzer that spoke here yesterday? And you listen to him? And I'm coming to you, Rosh Shiva, and you're telling me I can't speak to the Knesset? Anyway, that was before political correctness, I'll tell you that much. So we get used to a lot of crazy things. Anyway, so what were the people in Shushan thinking while all this was going on? So Rav and Shmuel argue about this. Now, obviously, they're not calling each other idiots, because if you hold him as a melech tipesh, then that means that the man diomer holds that he was a melech b'tzchachem is a tipesh. So what we're talking about over here is the understanding of the context. And that was a question, because there are sometimes, in fact, where this is a smart move and sometimes where it's a stupid move. So this was the issue. So chanamar melech tipesh haya. Look, I mean, this is a ridiculous thing. Man diomer melech pikeach haya. Shapirava, that was a smart move. What was it? Because basically, as a result of rebellion and unrest in the provinces, this is a very large empire, so he needed to keep things quiet because he had just had military victories, but there was a sense of imposition, and he was trying to position himself as a populist, as we'll see. So he brings, first of all, people from far away who had been involved in schemes against the central government, because Bnei Mate Kolema Dabai Mephayaslu. Look, if he noticed that there would be any unrest locally, he could always do something about that. But to deal with the provinces requires a lot of strategic planning, and therefore he did that first. Whereas Mandio Marti Peshaya, because how was he so sure that he had a strong enough base to be able to survive? That's what he needed to do first. He needed to take the people that were local first, because if that rebellion should continue, at least he would have had the local area of Shushan would have been with him. Shalu Talmidavit Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Now, this is a really profound interaction, which also has a lot of implications for the Holocaust. And it's interesting, after the Holocaust, Reb Simcha Zissel of Chelm pointed out the contemporary implications of this discussion. Because remember, and we're going to see this at the end of the daf, there was a tremendous amount of resentment to Mordechai, for obvious reasons. I mean, this guy, all he needed to do was go along with him, with Haman, and he goes out of his way, as we're going to see in the craziest ways, he goes out of his way to stick it to him, so that he gets Haman more and more angry, until finally we have this gezerah of La Hashmid, La Harog, La Abed, and people were outraged at this kind of behavior, which endangered all of Klal Yisrael because of his determination that this was the right thing to do. So this was, remember, immediately after the Holocaust, you still have crazies going around with this myth. You know, well, the stupid rabbis, when they had their big meetings and determined what to do about the Nazis and so on and so forth, they told people not to move to Eretz Yisrael and that they should stay where they are. And had everybody moved there to Israel, everything would have been fine, you know, because then the Nazis would never have been able to have done all the damage that they did. Of course, as I pointed out before, it's utter nonsense because of the way in which the whole desert war proceeded, that could so easily have simply, and was in fact a question with Rommel, easily have taken over Palestine. It just wasn't worth it. So, fine. So anyway, so here the Talmidim ask Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, what is in fact the perspective that we're supposed to have about all of this, because it's clear that if there was this gezeira, lashmi, la'arog, la'abed, then they at the time would have had to be responsive to why. Like, why are we in this situation? So, Reb Shimon, this is a fascinating conversation. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai says, why don't you tell me? So, because he wanted to point out to them the difference between a real historical perspective and people who think that they have historical perspective. I said, you tell me. So they said to him, well, I mean, if you take a look at the story begins with this big party, and the whole purpose of this party, after all, was the celebration of the cessation of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And Jews go into that party where it's so clear that the whole point of the party, wearing the big kahuna and taking out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash and so on, that the whole point of it was to celebrate the end of the Jews, and Jews go in there, and like, this is mamish J Street. Like, what's going on? Even Trump can see they got to hate. It's got to be that they hate the Jewish people. So it was mipnei shenehenu misu'udato shel ato rasha. They went in there and they participated. Yeah, says Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, it's an interesting point. Omar lahem. There's only one problem. Since that was an event that was local, then, because the only time that he invited everybody in, which would have included the common Jew, was when he made the seven-day local Su'udah for the people in Shushan, in which case only the Jews in Shushan should have been killed. But why was there a gezeira on Jews all over the world? Shebekol olam kulo al yargu. So they said to him, okay, so you tell us. I said, okay, now I'm going to tell you. All right? Emorata, omar lahem mipnei sheishtachavu letzelem. So what? Ishtachavu letzelem? I mean, we're talking about the 12th year over here, basically. This is when the poor was in the 12th year of Achashverosh. And you're talking about Ishtachavu letzelem, which is like 50 years before. And this was at the time of Nebuchadnezzar, you know. And we see, how do we even know Ishtachavu letzelem? We know, says Rashi, because we see that three people, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, were Moser Nefesh, not to be Ishtachavu letzelem. But if it was a common response that no Jews were Ishtachavu letzelem, then he should have taken out on the Jews, not on Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. So that means Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah were the ones who stuck up for that din. Now, as Tosis points out over there, there was no Isser in Ishtachavu letzelem because it was not an Avodah Zarah. It was a tribute to Malchus Bavel. So it was basically an Andarta. It was like a sign of the Chashivas of Bavel and the Malchus of Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, so, they figured that's not so bad. I mean, you're allowed to bow down to a Melech. So they're just showing cover to the Melech. Whereas Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah recognized that this was a substitution of political power for the whole nature of the Beis HaMikdash and Klal Yisrael. And this was the man that had made that his great achievement. Like the Romans, you take a look at the Romans, you take a look at what it meant to them, that they were able to be Kevesh Yerushalayim. Or take a look at Sancheriv, who was unable to be Kevesh Yerushalayim, and what a central role that plays in his life and in the writings that he leaves over and everything. It's unbelievable. So, if that's the case, it means that it must have been from then. So he's telling his Talmidim, I'm telling you that we're talking about something from a perspective of history that goes back to the beginning of Malchus Bavel and that has finally reached its climax with the very moment which was supposed to be the end of Golus Bavel. That's like a completely different way of looking at it. And this is exactly what it was that he pointed out, Reb Simcha Zissel. Because what he said was, look, I mean, from the point of view of any normal person, you take a look at the local events and so on, and like the Talmidim say, I mean, so what we can see is that this is the way to deal with it. Yeah, okay, but that doesn't really explain anything, does it? So if you take, and he personally testified, he says, if you would have seen, as I saw, the depth of commitment, concern, chokhmah, and the unbelievable level of perspective and awareness that went on at that meeting, you would have been embarrassed to open your mouth, because it's not something that you ever see. And the same thing is true over here. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is making fun of them. You tell me. Come on. Come on, kids. You tell me. Now you want to hear the truth. Now we're talking about, you can't even, to you, these are things that happened, you know, way before you were born, so to speak. It's not Nogea. All I can see is what's so obvious, what should have been done. Okay. So this is what happens when somebody tells you that something has to do with things way, way before. Amrulo, so they said to Rabbi Shimon, but then if you're telling us that they bowed down and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is viewing that like bowing down to Avodah Zarah, then why weren't they destroyed? So then they really were chayev to be destroyed. So what, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not carrying out the din, so now this is about by his favoritism. Omar Lahem, because they didn't mean any of it. They were just acting out, right? They didn't believe a bit of it. They wished the idiot would drop dead. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu also, he didn't really mean it. I just want to scare the hell out of you guys, okay? You're all going to be wiped out, every single one, man, woman, and child. Okay, now what are you going to do? Oh, you're going to do tshuva. Oh, okay, I changed my mind. So this is the same thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was playing games with them. And that's the beautiful pasuk. Ki lo ina milibo. He doesn't put his heart into causing problems for people. He doesn't want the problem. He just scares them so they should be able to do teshuva. Well, you think I'm interested in hurting you? You crazy? Now let's move on to where the Suda was taking place. It was Bechatzar Ginat Bitan HaMelech. Now, those are three different locations. A chotzer is a chotzer. A gina is a gina. A bitan is the actual palace itself. I mean, where was it? Was it outdoors? Was it indoors? Was it in the chotzer? Was it in the garden? So how do you explain that? So Rav Shmuel, Chad Omer, Haraui lechatzer lechatzer, Haraui legina legina, and Haraui lebitan lebitan. Actually, it was a function of how important the guest was. I mean, if it's a very important guest, he would be brought into the palace itself. And if he was less important, he would be put in the garden, in the beautiful king's gardens. And if we're just a regular guy, so then he was in the chatzar, which is fine. V'chad omar, whereas the other says, no, he actually started this as, you know, this big barbecue, outdoor barbecue, everything was nice, everybody was supposed to be the chatzar, but people just kept coming. So there wasn't room in the chatzar, they had to move into the gardens. So lo hechzikitan, so they moved into the garden. They moved into the garden, people still kept on coming. Lo hechzikatan. Now what's he going to do? He can't turn anyone away, because that's the whole point. This is the populace. This is the man of the people. This is the guy that, oh, you want to come in? I'm sorry, we don't have room for you. What are you, crazy? You can't do that. So he's got to open up his own palace, and he's got to bring everybody in, because he can't afford to say no. So achich nisan lebitan v'chzikatan. And in the Braisa, there's another meaning. The Braisa says, look, it's not that they were three different places. Chatzar Ginat Bitan. What's Chatzar Ginat Bitan? I mean, it puts all three together. The point is that the party took place in the Chatzar. However, it was open on either side. You didn't have to sit there in the Chatzar. So you could go to one side and move into the gardens and walk around while the food was being served in the Chatzar. Or you could take the palace tour and watch the beautiful Barnea tour on the crown jewels and do the whole thing. And that way, by the time you get back, you know, the first few 100,000 people had left and there were fresh hamburgers for you and so on. So, okay. So that's the way that he did it. So we got three understandings of it. What is this exactly? What does chur actually mean? Rav says the word comes from chor, means holes. And holes? Yeah. So that must be that there were these beautiful, like we have bedspreads today, right? So they're made with holes. Actually, if they're needlework, that's like the whole beauty of a bedspread. So, you know, and it looks, if you hold it up to the light, it looks like there's little holes because every place you put through a thread, right? So that means that this is like very delicate needlework. So it was chori chori. Shmuel says the word chur comes from chiver, which is that it's white. So it means white linens. He spread out, or wool. He spread out these beautiful tablecloths, gleaming white. That's what we talk about at a fancy dinner. And it's referring to that. And what's karpas? Om Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, that is Karim Shel Pasim. So it means these beautiful cushions that were put all over the place, people to put on, and they were made out of the Pasim, reference back to Yosef. Ketonet Pasim. Question exactly what Pasim, there's Machlokas Rishonim. Pasim meaning fine wool, or cashmere, or maybe silk, according to some Rishonim. Then it says, Al Galilei Chesev, Ve'amudei Sheish, Mitot Zahav V'Chesev. Now, I mean, were the Mitot Zahav or were they Chesev? I mean, how could they be both? So Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no, there were different levels. People that were on the Madrega of deserving gold, yes, they had golden couches to sit on. But I mean, the lower level people, they only got Kesev. Omer lo Rabbi Nechemia, hey man, you can't say that pshat, it's ridiculous. Because imkena tamaitil kin aba su'uda, you're destroying the whole point of this dinner. The whole point of the dinner was that the man of the people makes no such distinctions. From the lowest level worker in the streets to the highest government official, we all share this new understanding of the importance of every human being, of every language, every color, every religion. How could he possibly make a difference between the people that were going to have the golden beds and the people that were going to have the silver beds if the whole darn issue was to show that there is no such concern to Mr. Man of the People, right? So that can't be the pshat. So Tosa says, wait a minute, but why didn't we say that before when we were talking about ha-ra'ui le-gina, le-gina, ra'ui le-bitan, le-bitan? We didn't say that there. So Tosa says, look, I mean, maybe over there, it's because since it's different locations, it's not in your face. Like there's the guy next to you is sitting on a mitah of zahav, and you're only sitting on a mitah of kesev. So maybe over there, we didn't consider it to be so problematic. Okay, I mean, yeah, I'm sure you could think of other approaches as well. But anyway, so Rabbi Nechemia says, look, that doesn't make sense. So the meaning, that therefore it has to be, all of the mitot were both zahav and kesef. So the mitah itself was silver, and they couldn't make the whole bed out of gold. So they made the legs were of gold. So the bottom of the mitah was of gold. That's a pretty nice looking kind of thing. So you got this silver couch with golden legs. And then it continues to say that this was al ritzpat bahat vashesh. So they put it on the floor that was obviously a beautiful floor that was covered with these amazing stones, bahat vashesh. And we're not sure what that means, but it was clearly a very expensive and artistic tiled floor. So what are bahat vashesh? Omer of Asi, it means Avanim shemichotatot al ba'alayhem. The point over here is bahat means actually bahat, because we often find the hey and the chet interchangeable. And therefore, this would be like a lovely point. The meaning of mechotatot is you got to dig it out. You got to dig for it. So the meaning would be that none of this stuff could be purchased on Amazon. It meant that you had to look all over to be able to find a dealer in these kind of stones. So that itself became the impressive part of this. Wow, where did he get that from? Must have been imported straight from who knows where. And right, so that's the idea. So it's bechotetot. You got to dig for this before. That's real show-off. Mela, you got a little extra money. You can buy it on Amazon. Anybody could buy it. So that's the point. V'chein huomer, and you want to see the same language that's used? This is really fascinating. Avne nezer mit nosisot al admato. So over here we're talking about the way that it'll be bismanosh or Mashiach and the crowns. And what does mit nosisot mean? So mit nosisot comes from the word nisayon. And nisayon means you're going to try it out. Why would you try it out? I'll tell you why. Because basically, you ordered 5 different sources for this stuff. Now, how do you know that any of it's going to be usable when it arrives and it's really going to be as advertised? So you got to try it out. So that's the mitnosisot. So that's, again, the mitchatatot. It's very difficult to get this stuff. Vidar v'socharet. So what does dar v'socharet mean? So Rav says dar means like rose. Dari, dari. These are separate roles. Rose, and socharet means schor, schor, round and round. So that it's giving you the sense of these precious stones and their inset, And they're inset round with different circles of different stones. You're getting a sense of what the tiles look like. And that's the meaning. Shmuel says, no. Dar is actually the name of a particular type of radioactive stone, which is, it's an Even Tova Yesh Becharchei Hayam, which is called Dara. And it actually emits light. So Hoshiva Be'emtza Seuda, U'me'ira Lehem Ketzorayim. You know, Putin learned to do this also, except he puts it into injections. But so this was the type of thing that he put in the middle of his Seuda. And it made it bright as could be. The Ve'Rabbi Shmuel Tana. No, man, you're missing the point. This is beautiful. Dar V'socharet. Put the two words together. Dar means drawer. Drawer means liberty. Liberty always has to do with merchandise. Dar, you can bring, as Rashi says, right? That's the meaning. So dar is, you can go and live wherever you want. U'melich sechora b'chol makom, as the Gemara says. So dar v'socharet means a tax break. And it was a tax break. There was no more VAT. So he let go of the VAT, which brought prices down for everybody. And therefore, it was an extremely popular move. Now, again, if you think that this is a small issue, let me take a look. Again, what is everybody talking about? And what's the last pasuk, the last perek in the Megillah? Vayasem Achashverosh Mas. So when Achashverosh finally grows up, instead of becoming dependent on everybody else and what it is that they're going to think of him, he says, read my lips. There will be new taxes. Okay, so that anyway becomes the main point of the difference between the opening Achashverosh and the closing Achashverosh. What happens after Esther teaches him what it is to be a real man? Sakara Drar, Lekobale Eschora. Continues the Megillah. The Ashkot, Bechleizahav, Vechelim, Mikelim Shonim. What does that mean? Shonim? It's not Shonim, it's Mishunim. I mean, you're talking about like very fascinating and different kind of Kelim. What's the word Shonim? Ah, Mishunim, Ibaileh, Omar Ravan. No, that's the whole point. A Basco comes out and says, idiots! Shonim? Look at the play on words. Rishonim kalu mipnei kelim. The first ones at the time of Belshazzar got themselves wiped out, kalu kelim, because they brought out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. You'd think that people could learn a little bit from history. No. They're going to do the same things. Okay. So atem shonim, man? You're trying the same shtick? Okay, so we'll see what happens because of that, that causes the Satan to appear in Vashti to be killed in Omais. What is the meaning of Yein Malchut Rav? Omar Rav, it doesn't mean a lot. It's not Harbe Yayin. It's Melamed. Shekol Echad ve'Echad. Yishkohu Yayin shegadol himenu b'shanim. Everyone got a little bottle of wine that was bottled in the year before the year of his birth. Cute, huh? I mean, that's something you can do on the internet. But what is the meaning of it? It's amazing. The meaning of it is exactly what we have found is so central to the whole thing. It's about hachana. You want to show a person that the world is there to be ready for his appearance. That's why everybody, why do people buy a newspaper that is the headline on the day that they were born, right? It's very popular. Get it anywhere. The same idea. I want to know that the world was there waiting for me, so to speak. So he had these bottles, got everybody's birthday as they came in, and he gave them a bottle that was dafka there for them. Ingenious. The guy's smart. Okay, so this way, they were really feeling good about this. Now, Ashtiya Kedat, what do you mean Kedat? I mean, what, there's like some religious laws about that drinking? I mean, well, this is certainly not the time of prohibition, is it? So, Amar Abchana Mishum Rabbi Meir, no, this means like the Torah. Remember, the guy was actually attempting to redo the Beis HaMikdash, right? Okay, so he takes a look at the Beis HaMikdash. What's the Achilas HaMizbeach? So just like Dat Shel Torah, the Achila of the Mizbeach is Meruba Mishtiha. So you take a look what you've got over there. You've got this gigantic par, and then you've got this mincha that comes with it. So this, wow, shalosh sayin together with the big par. And what do you got? A little bit of wine that's brought along with it. You know, okay, so he figured, okay, that's what we're going to do also. Afsu udator shalotor rasha, achila miruba mishtia. And when you say, hashtia chadat, ein ones, what's ein ones mean? Omar Rabbi Elazar, what this means, everybody was given wine that was meant, was coming from his own home. So this was the wine that he felt comfortable with, and he wouldn't feel like anybody's pushing him into trying out things he's not used to, and he's going to have to pretend he likes it. No, you like cholent. We give you a cholent. So that way, it was ein ones. Every time we learn this, I tell you over this brilliant story of my trip. I was going between Tzfat, actually between Meiron and Tzfat. And, you know, it was a one-lane road at that point, and it was very, very schleppy, and, you know, the guy's grinding his gears on this old bus. And he's got a radio turned up high. And it's during the Sfiras HaOmer. And he's playing music. It wasn't exactly the kind of music that anybody wanted to hear. Anyway, so this guy goes over to, it was actually a cousin of mine, goes over to the driver, and he says to the driver, Tagidli Mashu, what was missing and is not described in the Megillah at the big party that Achashverosh made? And it's like very dramatic. The Rebbe, this is for you. So the guy thinks, I mean, it's brilliant that he came up with this. The guy thinks, and he says, you know, it doesn't talk about the music. Where was the music? An amazing insight. How could you have a thing like this and it doesn't talk about, I mean, by the pestle of Nebuchadnezzar, it makes such a big, big thing about the music. It mentions every single instrument and so on again and again. And here it doesn't say a word about the music. So he says to the driver, so why do you think there was no music? I don't know. What could it be? Ein ones. How are you going to shut the music out of your ears? So the guy turned off the radio. Anyway, okay. That was when people knew how to be subtle. And then it says, Lasot kirtzon ish va'ish. So the whole point over here was to make everybody happy. So Omar Rava, forget about everybody. It's much deeper than that. You know the ish va'ish? There were two people at this party that were called ish va'ish. Mordechai and Haman. By Mordechai, it says Ish Yehudi, and by Haman, it says Ish Sarva Oyev. And of course, this goes back all the way to the nature of, you know, the Ha'ish Moshe and so on. So, which we're going to see about later. And therefore, to try to do what everybody wants, including Mordechai and Haman, is astounding. But the pshat that the Rishonim bring is that Mordechai and Haman were the two people that were in charge of the drinking at the party. So they were the Sarei HaMashkim, just like we found with Nehemiah and so on. And the idea over there is that the two of them obviously were working at odds, right? So they were each using the drinking for opposite purposes. So one of them was the Tzad Kedusha, one of them was the Tzad. Okay, there's a lot of talk on the more Hasidish discussions over here. Okay, Gam Fashtia Malka Asta Mishtenashim Beta Malchut. Wait, what do you mean Beta Malchut? If you're talking about making a woman's party, then it should be in the Beta Nashim, no? I mean, why does it stress the Beta Malchut? Omar Rava, you have to understand the whole idea over here. The background was that this was not only a populist party. It was not only bringing a new idea of democracy, concern for the common man, but it was also meant to be the Kennedy era. It was supposed to be a sexual revolution, and they had planned this out. So Vashti actually wanted to be called to the Seuda and do her little naked thing, and this was going to like loosen the morals, and everybody would be happy. And that was like Jacqueline Kennedy was going to show up, right? So she's got this all planned, and therefore it was meant to be the Beit HaMalchut. And that's how people say, you know, Shneim L'dvar Avera D'tkavnu, because that's the common saying. Iyu Bekari, the Itate, if he's involved with the pumpkins, then she's involved with the squash, meaning they're all having fun in the same way. So then, by Yom HaShvi, Ketov Lev HaMelech B'Yayin, and here it is, the seventh day, and the king is finally happy with his wine. You got to be kidding. It took him 7 days to finally get high? That's ridiculous. What was he doing all the other days? Oh, to Adhashta Lo Tavli Be'Bechamre. Oh, my Rav, the seventh day is a reference to the seventh day, meaning Shabbos Kodesh. Yom HaShvi'i Shabbataya. And this was the Iker Havdola between Yisrael and the Umas HaElam. So what happens when you're drinking? Yisrael on Shabbos, they have a tremendous Seuda. And it looks like Women's Day magazine with the people. I mean, they make a big fuss of spending 3 months preparing for your Thanksgiving Seuda, you know, which, you're going to buy a turkey, but by the Jews, it's every single Shabbos, and it puts all of that to shame, which is amazing. I always thought that there should be, every week, there should be an article about the Seuda Shabbos in the Women's Day magazine. But okay, anyway, so what is the difference between a Jewish Seuda and a Goyish Seuda? Ah, that's why it took place on the seventh day. Yisrael or Eichlin Rishaisin, and they bring out the Talisker, and they got all of this stuff. And I won't even mention what Richie brings out nowadays. It's, you know, like I say, Al Tiftach Batzbechad Yomotcha. But anyway, the Jews obviously had brought out the Talisker, and they're drinking, and everybody is high. So what do they start talking about? Divrei Torah, Divrei Tishbachais, and it's a beautiful, beautiful Suda. The Goyim have the same Suda, and what do they talk about? Sex. Obviously. So the Tiflut. And that's exactly what happened B'Sudat Tor Shalot Tor Rasha. So what they start talking about, obviously, who are the ones who have the most gorgeous girls? So Halolo Amru, well, obviously, it's the girls from Modai that are most beautiful. Well, Halolo Amru, no, it's the Persians, Parsiot Naot. So Achashverosh says to them, hey man, I got a piece you'll never believe. He uses that word, kli. You should know, kli shani mishtamesh bo, my piece, eno lo madai velo parse, it's neither of that. It's kazdi, because it comes from Nebuchadnezzar, it's the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. And believe me, it puts them all to shame. Would you like to see her? Now this is, of course, what was planned, right? Ritzon chem lirota. So they say, yes, but she's got to be naked. I mean, how else can we see her? You probably got her so dressed up, you know, she'll make an impression. But we want to see her stripped to nature. I mean, give us a birthday suit, and then we'll know who's really beautiful. Why did this happen to Vashti? What it is that a person does, that's what happens to him. So this teaches us, this is B'Yom HaShvi, this teaches us that Vashti was a little bit strange. So she used to bring all of these Jewish girls on Shabbos. She used to strip them naked, and then she would have these naked girls, seems to have a little bit of a problem here, but she would have these naked girls running around doing all the work in her house. Okay? So this was quite a scene. So because of that, she was made to do the same thing. And that's why it says, "Aino dechtiv achar hadvarim ha'ele kishochama atamelach achashverosh zochar et vashtiv et asher asata v'et asher nigzar aleha." So what is the et asher asata v'et asher nigzar aleha? I mean, it just, all that he wanted to remember was what happened to her, right? No. That he realized, oh my God, that's scary. Kishem sha'asita kach nigzar aleha. There's got to be a reason for what happened to her. But wait a minute. It says she refused to come. Why? I thought that was the whole plan. Didn't you just say that she's like a sex maniac? And she was a pritztave, and she had all of this planned out? So why did she refuse to come? This is exactly the great moment she's waiting for. Amar Rav Yosi Bar Chanina, it's clear. Obviously, she must have gotten tzarat. And that's because we find the same lashon, the Yerushalmi says, we find the same lashon of nigzar aleha by Uziyahu. So it says that kach nigzar, and that he had to be, because of that, vayeshev Uziyahu ha-melech mitzorah ad yom moto, and he was there in the special house, because it was Nigzar. So we said the Lashon of Nigzar specifically comes to speak about Tzaraas. So she couldn't possibly show off her skin lesions to everybody. So that was the last thing that she was going to do. She gets this terrible case of psoriasis, and now we're going to see the beautiful girl covered with psoriasis. Oh, my God. B'masnisatana. Now, wait a minute. How did this whole thing start with Amalek and Ammon in the first place? Tails. They kept cutting off tails. So Gavriel came and stuck a tail on the donkey. Exactly. So he was, but Gavriel, v'asala zanav. He gave her a tail. And that was definitely not the way she wants to show up. Vayiktzof hamelech me'od. Okay, that's understandable. But what's this? V'chamato ba'arabo. Why the double level of she really got into him, man, inside of him, chamata ba'arabo, which is a different level of kas. What was burning? I mean, what was so terrible? She didn't? Because the words that she sent him back are missing from the text. But what she wrote to him, or sent to him with the messengers, the royal messengers, was to make the following proclamation in front of everybody. Bar Ahuriyare de Abba. Listen here, you stable boy. Because that's what he used to do for Belshazzar. He was in charge of the horses, but she, I mean, obviously wasn't literally a stable boy, but she turned him into a stable boy. The horse master of Belshazzar. You know what it says in the pasuk of my dad, Belshazzar? Abba, it says in the pasuk, Lekobol Alpha Chamre Shate. So that was the story of the Suda Belshazzar. He drank as much as 1,000 other people. Okay, so he can make 1,000 l'chaims. Richie, you got to practice this. He can make 1,000 l'chaims, and it wouldn't go to his head. Velo Ravi. Didn't affect him. Now that's a real man. And you jerk, Ahu Gavri Shtati B'charmi, you became an absolute idiot speaking to your wife like this. Bring your wife naked. What are you, nuts? Now, can you imagine? I mean, this, what this did to him. Now, this would be like Jacqueline Kennedy coming up on the, you know, right there, she comes up to the podium and Kennedy has just spoken at his inauguration and she grabs the mic and everybody's expecting her to say something. The man is a rapist. He is a murderer. You have no idea how he treats me. Oh, God. So here he is at this big party and this is his big moment and he's got it all planned out with her and she kills him. Well, no wonder it took him 3 years to be able to function again. So this was like unbelievable, right? So that's why Chamato Bar Rabba. Vayomer HaMelech l'chachamim yod'ei ha'itim. Who is the yod'ei ha'itim that are chachamim? They've got to be the Rabbanan, because yod'ei ha'itim is the way that we talk about yod'ei bina li'itim of b'nei Yisachar, that they know how to be ma'aber the chodesh, and they know about the whole secrets of astronomy. So that must be what he was referring to. Sheyodim la'ber shanim v'legboa chodeshim. So he calls them in and he says, look, I need somebody completely objective in this. And the only one that's really objective, I mean, the Jews, obviously, you know, they don't have anything to do with all our politics. You decide what it is we're going to do with her. Dainu Ali. So the Rabbanan said to them, oh my God, that is a death trap. What do we do? Namale Ketala? What, we tell him to kill her? I mean, Lamachar Pasik Lechamri, by tomorrow the guy will be a little bit sober. And then he's going to say, what'd you do? You killed my wife? Boy, let me none. So he's going to come and demand her life off of us. Shall we tell him, nah, it's okay, don't worry, Shvaka. You can't do that, because it's actually a chiyuv to make sure that the malchus should not be mizulzal. We can't tell him something that's a lie. So they said to him, Amrulo, look, you may have noticed that the Jews no longer have the court system that they used to have, and they used to pask in these capital cases. Now, why do you think that's true? It's because we're incapable of having that depth of insight that is required since the time of our Golos. Miyom Shecharav Beit HaMikdash, you know who's to blame for that. Vigalino Miartzeno, you know who's to blame for that. Nitla Etza Mimenu, Veinanu Yodim Ladun Dinei Nefashot. I mean, this is not something we're just coming up with. I mean, anybody knows this is a major change in the whole Jewish jurisprudence and so on. I'll tell you what you should do. You go, it should say to Moab, you go to Moab. Moab, they have never been affected by anybody. Nobody moved Moab out of places. Even Sancheriv didn't move Moab. And they're kechamra de yati badurdaya. They're like wine sitting around in the barrels on the sediments and getting richer and richer. These guys are the people. They know things. They haven't gone into gullahs. And they have their minds properly at rest. And it's really true, but it's not like something stupid. Because we find this, it actually says it in the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. It says, sha'anan mo'av minu urav, that these people have been quiet, they've never been bothered. Shoketu al shimarav, exactly what it says. There it's sitting calmly and quietly on the sediment in the barrels. Lo hurak mi kli al keli, uvagola lo alach. They were never poured from one container to another, meaning they never went from one location to another, and certainly uvagola lo alach, they've never been exiled. Alkein amad ta'amo bo v'recho lo namar. Because of that, they still have fine taste, and they can sniff things out properly, whereas we are in a very decimated state. So what happens right after that? V'akarov elav karshenash, yistar ad matat arshish, meres marzina amimuchan. What are these weird names? You ever hear names like that? So, Omer Rebbe Levi, look, the truth is that obviously this Beis HaMikdash moment could only be talking about HaKarov Elav would mean the Korbanot. Korev. Ah. So therefore, this entire Pasuk, Remez, each one of those names is a Remez to the Korbanot. And this is what the Malachi Asharis were pointing out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that here comes this Mamzer who wants to take the place of the Beis HaMikdash. And now is the big moment. We can get rid of Vashti. We could put Esther in there. And who knows what amazing, amazing miracles can happen because of that. And therefore they say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Omra Malachi Asharis v'bnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kar Shina, tell me, Ribbono Shel Olam, Klum hikrivu lefanecha karim b'nei shana, kiderech shekrivu Yisrael lefanecha. What about the carbon tamid? Did they ever bring a carbon tamid? A tzon that are within their first year? Never. How about sheitar? How about shnei torim? Klum hikrivu lefanecha shnei torim? You ever see goyim bringing those carbonas that all of these women, everybody's bringing all the time? Admata. Is there a mizbeach adama that they ever built? Tarshish. Klum shimshu lefanecha bebigdei kuhuna dechtibu tarshish v'shoem v'yashvei. Meres. Klum mirsu bedam lefanecha. You know, the Kohen Gadol, they have to have somebody stirring the dam between the various karbonas in Yom Kippur, that it shouldn't be nikrash. Did they ever do that? They never did that, did they? And how about marsina? Klum mirsu bemelachot lefanecha. Did they ever mix the menachas the way that Klal Yisrael has? Mimuchan. Klum hechinu shulchan lefanecha. What a beautiful insight, Rabbi Isai. Because the whole idea of the shulchan is that it's prepared a week in advance, which is the getter of hachana, which is the mun of Shabbos, that is muchan from before, which is the bracha in Maaseh Bereishis to the Shabbos, vayevarcheu, which means that the bracha is mimuchan from before. And that was the whole inyan, which was so different in the Beis HaMikdash. Everything else needed to be fresh. And the klum, as we find gufa in the hefkeres of the way in which we put together the parsha of the person who was considered to be not from Yisrael because he didn't have the yichus and he was thrown out. And he said, how come you're throwing me out and you're allowing the dead, completely spoiled challahs from a week ago? That's exactly it. The point is memuchan. So did they ever prepare the shulchan with the challahs in the Beis HaMikdash the way that Klal Yisrael did? Vayomer memuchan. So who is memuchan? Memuchan is the person, going back to the simple meaning of the verse, the person memuchan, obviously, is Haman. Why obviously is Haman? Because the word Haman means memuchan. Take a look in Rashi. Yisrael looks at this stuff and they say, man hu. And Rashi says, man hu means memuchan. It's hachanat ochlim. This is some type of strange preparation of food for us. The meaning of man is mizuman. So it is memuchan. This is not some wild type of diuk. So his real name was Haman. So why do we stress his name Memuchan over here? Because the whole point of the Megillah is to see it as a setup. Everything is mukhan in advance. And he is mukhan lepuranut. This guy is going to be getting it, man. Heavy duty. That's the point. Omer of Kahana. By the way, you know what you see from here? Shahed yot kofetz barosh. It's always the idiots that have no sense of their correct placement or behavior. He was the last one in the whole list, Meres Mar Sinan Memuchan. And who's the first one that has got something to say? Memuchan. Because when you have a solo class, you have no shame. Pop right up, give your Eitzah. And what's his brilliant Eitzah? Lihiyot kol ish sorer beveito. A man's got a rule in his own home, and we cannot allow this to take place. Omar Rava, thank heavens that he did that. Because ilmalei igrot harishonot, lo nishtayr misoneim shel Yisrael sorid v'polit. Remember that our understanding of the Megillah is that this was an absolutely brilliant move by Haman, but truly brilliant. Because what it was that Ahasuerus was suffering from, as we just explained, was that he had been completely mushpal in front of the entire nation at the moment that he was trying to make himself something, and he was going to be utilizing the Malchus Bavel, which was Vashti, in order to make this transition into a new world of populism and semi-democracy. And Shema Tomru, that I'm making this up, read Daniel. And you'll see that the whole point of the various monsters in Daniel is the expression of the development of Malchus and how it goes from Memshola to the internet. And that's what shattered Daniel at the end of the story. This is not a small issue. This was his entire vision of history and the nature of the Malchus that only at the end would be understandable as what the real meaning of Malchus is and the real meaning of a global village as it's brought together under the Yad HaShem Mashiach as Malchus. That's the stress over here on Mashiach versus Koresh. These are, they sound like they're like little points. They're immensely important points. So basically, Haman came up with the only possible solution for poor Ahasuerus. And that's the reason that he became the central figure in Ahasuerus' life. He's the only one that let him survive. Because what he did was he turned the entire focus away from Ahasuerus and he put it into the context of the way women treat men. Oh, yes, yes, we've all been through this. And it's about time that this country makes a change in the tolerance level of the way that women are getting away with murder and becoming more and more chutzpahdik, and they actually think that the men should be taking care of them. This has got to stop. And I pointed out this was a few elections ago, but one of the possible contestants over there in the States had made this, I don't remember because I never saw it, but there was this something, maybe some of you remember it, something brown. It was this soap opera. And he had announced that the big problem in the country was this soap opera. It was like, what was it called?
Murphy Brown.
Murphy Brown, right. Who was it? Who was it? Do you remember?
Was it Bob Dole?
Yeah, I think it was. Anyway, it destroyed him completely. Exactly. Huh?
Agnew, maybe. Vice President.
Oh, was Agnew? Was that long ago? Agnew didn't need that to ruin
it.
Yes, it was Quayle. Oh,
I looked it up.
Of course. Okay, right. I remember Dan Quayle. Right. So who's going to remember Quayle? So okay, please mute yourselves. Please mute yourselves. Anyway, so he did the same thing. It completely backfired. Please mute. He completely. Oh, man. So this is what Haman did brilliantly. Because by turning it into the common man's moral problem that has to be dealt with the deep sympathy and empathy of the highest echelon of government that finally recognizes what we're going through and where the underlying problems of this country lie in the deep immorality of the way women perceive themselves with their entitlements and their chutzpah, by doing that, he turned the whole thing into something that was supportive of the common man, or at least he pretended, Everybody there was sniggering. Oh, my God. You got to be kidding. But they didn't dare snigger in front of Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus knew deep down that this is insane. So the only one that was able to really be in the presence of Ahasuerus was, okay, Haman, you and me understand. I know that you know, you know that I know. But from that point on, he was extremely dependent on Haman. So, but the people that got this letter from Haman, which was basically Quayle's letter about Murphy Brown, burst out laughing. But because of that, the amazing thing was, is that he saved Klal Yisrael at that moment. Saved Klal Yisrael? Yes. Because imagine what would have been if the government would send out letters that people should be prepared with a year's worth of preparation to get every Jew in sight. I mean, you really think they would spend the year preparing? They'd start having fun right away. So, but because they got this original letter, and they said, this guy's out of his mind. He's mad. So who knows what, I mean, maybe tomorrow he'll change his mind. Sure enough, of course, the letters ended up being the exact opposite. So, if it wouldn't have been for these letters, there wouldn't have been a single person to survive from Klal Yisrael. The guys, people read the letter and they said, what? My eye to shut him. What is this guy telling us? What is he, an idiot? Pshita. Even a weaver is the big boss in his own house, don't you think? So what did he do? He has these people collecting kol nara betula. Every beautiful girl is going to be brought to Ahasuerus. Omarav, you know? What exactly was Shlomo HaMelech referring to? That intelligent people, they do things with seichel. And it's the fools that just spread out their perversions. Kol arum yaseh bedat. This is referring to David HaMelech. David HaMelech is looking for a beautiful girl. So he's looking for one girl. So they're looking all over the country. Who's the most beautiful girl? Every daddy wants his little girl to be the new princess, right? The new queen. So they're all coming and they're saying, how about her? Do you like her? And finally they find this beautiful girl, Avisha Gashulami. So Komanda Havile Barta Aitaniala. But Ahasuerus, the fool, Uxili Fros Ivelet, there they tell him, Veyafkeda Melach Pikidim, and go bring Kolna Rabbit. You're going to bring every single girl, try them out, and then decide whether you like them. Believe me, every daddy is going to take their sweet little girl and hide them. What are the chances? He's definitely going to rape them, and then he's going to throw them into the street. So Komandavile Barti Tmarine. They actually went and they hid from him.